Today's episode of the Film Stage Show is brought to you by MUBI, the online streaming cinema, for your free 30-day trial. All you got to do is go to mubi.com/filmstage.
We don't have to worry about nothing. We got the fire, and we burn in one hell of a something. They're gonna see us from outer space, light it up, like we're the stars of the human race, when the light's turning down, they don't know.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the movie review podcast for thefilmstage.com. As always, I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan. And with me today to talk about the killing of a sacred deer, we have Michael Snydell.
Hello!
We also have Bill Graham.
Woo!
Woo! We hope you all enjoyed last week's special episode where we had director Stephen Cohn on. Hopefully we'll be able to have him back when we talk about his film Princess Cid. Keep an eye out for that. It is getting a slow rollout and should be... The widest it's going to get, I think, was December, so we will hopefully be back around then to talk about it more. But we're back, just the three of us this week, to talk about the newest film from the director of The Lobster, the enigmatically named Yorgos Lanthimos, which is the strangest looking name that I appear to have no trouble saying out loud.
So. Can you say that writer for us, Brian?
I can definitely give it a whirl. Let's see. The writer is Ephthemis Philippou.
That's probably nothing.
That sounds like it could be right.
Sounds vaguely like a name.
Yeah, I think that's good. Anyway, yeah, so this is the newest film from the director of The Lobster, co-written by him and Ephthemis Philippou. It stars Lobster star Colin Farrell, along with Nicole Kidman and a bevy of others. And we're going to talk about it. Before we get into it, usual stuff, twitter.com/filmstage. Find us on iTunes, give us a comment and rating. Email us, podcast@thefilmstage.com. And I think that's about it for our social media presence. We have Facebook as well. I'm sure that you can find us there. And let me remind everyone that we are supported by listeners like you, who is listening to this currently. All you gotta do is go to patreon.com/thefilmstageshow, and for as little as $1 an episode, you can help us to make a better show. Like, perhaps help us get some better equipment, so we don't have weird audio lags every now and then in the middle of an episode. So, again, that is patreon.com/thefilmstageshow. You get access to our Slack channel, and a bevy of other cool stuff, like getting entered into all of our cool video giveaway raffles. We are also brought to you by MUBI, the online streaming cinema. MUBI has a new film premiering each day that sticks around for 30 days before it disappears into the ether. So that means you have a constantly rotating selection of 30 films to watch from. To watch from? From which to watch? Doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You'll always have 30 films that you have direct access to. You can download them onto your mobile device. You can watch them on your PC, your mobile device, or your smart TV. And once again, just because, like, I don't know how long ago this happened, but Hulu redesigned their app on my Roku, and it is the worst goddamn thing I've ever seen. Hulu now has a worse app than Amazon, which I didn't think was possible. But MUBI has a beautiful app that is really good at showing you what they got. You're able to scroll through everything easy peasy, get a good idea of what's on there, and then watch it with no madness to deal with. So if you would like to have a sampling of the wonder that is MUBI, go to mubi.com/filmstage and you will get a free 30-day trial.
We've mentioned a couple of different series they're doing, but their latest series, I literally jumped to my seat when I saw it because they're doing a couple Powell and Pressburger films. Peeping Tom was added today, which I've been trying to see for a long time and have been having difficulty getting a hold of. So that was added there. And then they did Tales of Hawkman and something that was a little more rare that I wasn't familiar with. But
Peeping Tom, the movie that basically destroyed their careers.
Yep. But that that's pretty exciting.
Yeah. And you've never seen that before.
Peeping Tom? No.
Oh, man. I saw it in college as part of a film studies class. And it is something. It is something. Anyway, so yeah, you can get all that on Mubi by going to mubi.com/filmstage for a free 30-day trial. Do it. Check it out. Give them some love because they love us. But that's, that's about it. It's one of those things where it's like, is there any movie news we want to discuss? Probably. But, like, who has the psychic energy? We recorded, like, a 20-minute segment, and then my life was so hectic, I was going to put it out 4 days later, and by that point, so much new stuff had happened that it just didn't even feel like it could cover it anymore. Everything is imploding. The world is on fire.
I was mentioning to my girlfriend the other day that, like, Alamo could not be happier. Like, it's an unfortunate timing, or it's an unfortunate situation all the way around, but Alamo could not be happier about the Harvey Weinstein thing, like, happening, because, like, all of a sudden, nobody is talking about Alamo.
About Leak. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, you know, that's not great, but you know what else isn't great? 30 years of rape and harassment.
Yes.
And then you've got fucking Kevin Spacey now, too, and...
it's like a
virus, but a virus that's like good for you, because at the end of it, hopefully everything it probably won't be better, quote unquote, but maybe we'll be in a more honest place. So who knows?
Sure.
Maybe when the next huge thing happens, we'll actually sit down and have a proper conversation that we can then put out there. But I mean, like,
I think the one complicated thing, Brian, that you have mentioned repeatedly is what's so strange about so many of these is that many of them have been out in the open, but there wasn't a possibility for something to happen. And that is what, you know, makes a lot of these, which it doesn't take away from their impact or diminish any of this whatsoever.
No.
Just rather puts... a different context on all of this, like a different patina.
It's the type of thing where it's like, you know, Kevin Spacey, I live around where they shoot, obviously, House of Cards. And it's just like, I know people who were on the set with him and were kind of like told about him. A friend of mine posted a thing on Facebook that was like, I was a background extra in House of Cards, and like the makeup lady, like, told me some stuff about Kevin Spacey and was just like, you know, don't talk to him. You know, he's very in his self, but you know, you're kind of right. You're like what he looks for in a guy. So like, maybe he'd like it. And then apparently Spacey did like stop and talk to him and was vaguely inappropriate, but he thought nothing of it at the time. But like, this is stuff we've known about it. Everyone likes to post compilations of Family Guy and other comedies that make jokes about it. And it just seems like we've hit a sea change. And suddenly that shit ain't okay anymore, which is good. Which is, you can't be Errol Flynn anymore. Like, you gotta just fucking be a good person, for Christ's sakes, and stop hiding behind your celebrity and power and money. Anyway, speaking about being a good person, let's talk about the killing of a sacred deer.
Oh, Jesus.
This is
tasteful transitions.
Film. Yes. I'm really good at the awkward/brilliant transitions. I guess also, did anyone see Thor Ragnarok? Bill, that seems like something you would have gotten out and seen.
Not yet. Next weekend.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a busy weekend. So this, I had to sneak this in during the middle of the day on, I think, Thursday. Yeah, Thursday, because Friday was packed. And so I saw it Thursday using the movie pass. Woo-woo. And which worked flawlessly, but... it did give me kind of like heart palpitations when I realized I had to be 100 yards from the theater until I could like confirm it. I was like, well, this is giving me anxiety, and I didn't realize I was going to get anxiety from this. But
there's some reports too from people who are both longtime members of MoviePass, as well as, you know, people who have been trying to get become a part of MoviePass ever since that promotion, who have had some really iffy arguably really shitty things happen to them. I've seen a few people who were literally just dropped by the service.
Damn.
Not to mention our benevolent Lord and Master Jordan Ropp pointed out that their terms changed very
quickly. Yes. So now you can only see one movie once.
Yeah.
Which I don't like. I never really get a chance to go out and see a movie for a second time, so it doesn't really bother me. But that also kind of means like there's literally no way that you could go see a movie every day because there's just not that many coming out. Like they would have to release 7 new films a week for you to be able to go out and see a new one every day. But anyway.
Although I think maybe that limitation might be at like a single theater. It may not actually hold true at like other theaters.
Well, because let's try it out. I'm going to go see Killing of a Sacred Deer at every theater I can find and see if MoviePass will work. What was I going to say? Oh, we were talking about maybe doing Thor Ragnarok, but like, you know, who wants that? If you're listening to this, you probably know how we feel about the Marvel films. They range from fine to less than great. And, you know, this is the funny one.
Even so, even if it's good, I just don't think there's that much to talk about it.
I almost want to do it just because of the director, just because we loved I loved What We Do in the Shadows so much.
Yeah, that was fantastic. And then Hunt for Wilder People.
Yeah. Which, I don't think
we ever got around to actually doing a recording.
Maybe we should have just done that. We should have just done Wilder People instead.
Sure.
That would have been great.
That would have been damn it. That's it. Podcast over. We'll be back in 4 hours.
Restart. Yeah.
What was I going to say? I have a friend who has been on this show, Dan Gavazdin. He is a big Marvel zombie, and he actually didn't really like the movie that much because it is the funny one. He says he wishes that they would lean into their weirdness more and not have to undercut it with jokes. So I'm curious about that. And so I'll probably see the movie at some point. But
I don't know. I think Thor 2 definitely leaned into the weirdness, and everybody was like, ooh, God, no.
I don't think it leaned into the weirdness, though. I think it leaned into, like, this grim
nonsense,
weird, shitty. I actually like the first Thor movie. That's like my deep dark secret.
It's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, Brenegg's original is really good. Like, I remember,
I won't say really good, but I enjoyed it. It was cute, weird, like out of time romance, and Hemsworth was really broad, and he seemed like a Norse god doing like his smashing a cup, demanding a horse type of thing, which I think now he's just like a dude, bro. And I don't really like it, but we'll see. Anyway, we're here to talk about Killing of a Sacred Deer, the newest film from the Yorgos Lanthimos, the director of The Lobster and Dogtooth. It stars Colin Farrell and Nicole Kidman. And Barry, did we ever figure out how to say Barry's last name?
Keoghan.
Yeah. All right. It's not Keegan. It's Keoghan.
Yeah, it's Keoghan. All
right. Barry Keoghan. And, so it is out in theaters now in limited release, and here is the trailer.
And we're burning one hell of a something. They're gonna see us from outer space.
Yeah, I'm really sorry about Bob.
It's nothing serious.
No, it is.
Like we're the stars of the human race. Human race.
Where did you two go?
When the lights started out, they don't know what they heard. Strike the match, playing loud, giving love to the world.
How did his father die?
A surgeon never kills a patient. An anesthesiologist can kill a patient, but a surgeon never can.
All right, that is the trailer for The Killing of a Sacred Deer. Let's talk about it. First of all, we did an episode on Lobster. Was that both of you, or did we have to get a sub in for that?
I was not on that one.
Oh, okay.
Michael, did you ever see The Lobster?
Yeah, it was in... I mean, I didn't love it, but I thought it was good. Dogtooth is would probably be in like my top 20 of this century, honestly.
Interesting. All right.
I never got around to that one.
Yeah, I never saw Dogtooth, but I really liked The Lobster. I can't remember if it was on the top 10 of the year for that year. You know, if I were thinking about it, I could have done a modicum of research and just gone to my Letterboxd, but let's just leave that a mystery. Suffice to say, in retrospect, I feel like it could have been my top 10 of the year. So we're all coming to The Killing of a Sacred Deer with a certain amount of affection for this director. And I love Colin Farrell. unabashedly.
Yes.
Liked him in True Detective Season 2, which I know a lot of people pretend doesn't exist. I've liked him since he had a nearly wordless part in Tim Roth's directorial debut, The War Zone. Fan of his in Tigerland, the only good Joel Schumacher film in like 30 years. So let's see what we all thought about this. Bill Graham, why don't you kick us off? What are your basic roundabout spoiler-free thoughts on the killing of a sacred deer?
Sure. I really enjoyed this film. I was not a big fan of The Lobster. I had a lot of issues with it kind of surrounding the characters and the way that they interacted. I really enjoyed the world building in that film. And so this one takes place in our reality. It's not too far of a stretch of a film. And it's got some, I would say, supernatural elements to it that I really enjoyed, that the film just like flat out does not care about like exploring in like what are the limitations and how does it work and all of this. Like, it's just like, yeah, no, this kid is capable of doing something crazy and we're just not going to really talk about it too much. There's a lot left to the imagination. There's a lot of ambiguousness surrounding this. If you're put off by Yorgos kind of speech patterns and things like that that he implements through the script and how his characters talk, particularly, you know, the follow over from The Lobster's Colin Farrell to this film's Colin Farrell, they talk pretty much the exact same. They kind of have the same patterns and rhythms. And they're very almost, I would say, almost it's not Asperger's. It's like almost on the spectrum of like having a conversation with these people. It's very kind of odd. The rhythms are odd and they say things out loud that a lot of people wouldn't necessarily say out loud. And yet
there's no filter.
Yeah, there's no filter in the, like, just the rhythms of the conversation almost seem like they're not listening to each other and just kind of like talking at each other. It's interesting.
It's like when you enter like words into one of those speech programs.
Yeah,
and it can enunciate and pronounce everything correctly, but like it can't nail human expression properly.
Yes, yes, very much so. It's just slightly off center, right? And I just really enjoyed all the characters in this film are really interesting, and they have so many different shades. And whether it's like the music and what he's doing with just kind of like the sound design down to just the links that the two parent characters, Nicole Kidman and Colin Farrell, kind of go through. I forget if we even set up the kind of basic idea of this film. Did we do that yet?
No, I just kind of,
I don't know.
I don't know. I don't like, I'll say this. Colin Farrell is a surgeon who is given a rather unfortunate test from the son of a client or a son of a patient who who feels he was
a mysterious relationship. Farrell. You could just say mysterious relationship with that kid.
Sure. Sure. And so basically Colin Farrell has to figure out how to kind of either best this kid or just like figure out another solution. And so there's a lot of kind of like tension between him and Nicole Kidman and their two kids and everything like that. It should be noted that there is kind of a class dynamic at play as well. I don't know if that's too much of a spoiler, but I feel like that's a neat little kind of wrinkle that they kind of added in there. Where the kid is obviously not from like super well off, and you know, Colin Farrell is married to, I can't remember what Nicole Kidman actually does, but she definitely works.
She's an ophthalmologist.
So that's eyes, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So they're both in the medical field. So, you know, imagine what that means for their lifestyle and, you know, the house that they live in and everything like that. So yeah, all that being said, it's a really interesting, really weird, strange film, but it is just a tad over 2 hours, I believe, and it's very enjoyable, especially compared to The Lobster, which I had some issues with because of the character interactions. I feel like the character interactions here are oddly, like, pretty much exactly what I would expect them, or, like, not expect them, but, like, they seem to be making intelligent decisions, right? So, yeah, I really enjoyed this one.
All right, Michael Snydell, what did you think of The Killing of a Sacred Deer?
Yeah, I really, really disliked this one. I mean, to be fair, I'm very much in the minority going from the kind of cultural discussion around this one. I've been trying to figure this out a little bit because, as I said, I definitely have a very strong affection for Dogtooth, and I like The Lobster as well. But I think there's a few different problems for me in this one. I tweeted about this, but I want to expand on it a little bit. I think this is the first Yorgos Lanthimos film where the self-imposed rules that are needed for his narratives to work felt more like an endpoint instead of a foundation. And I think that I really can't get into this yet, can I, guys?
That's why I keep saying general thoughts.
Okay. We
can get into the
Fair
details
enough.
Later.
All right, sorry. Anyways, so I think this is the first one where all from the pattern and rhythms of the dialogue and the weird like infantilization and equalization between adults and children, like all of these strange human dynamics. This is the first time it felt like a real chore to me. The one thing I came away saying, I want to know what this kid is going to do, is Barry Keoghan, who is extremely obnoxious, but finds some really interesting nuances in the delivery of this strange dialogue while also staying within Lanthimos' like hermetic world. There's one scene in particular I want to talk about a little bit later, but it's not only that I don't think the premise holds up, I also think that this is just like overwrought in a way that his other films haven't felt. Like there's been a rigorousness to The Lobster and Dogtooth, but this has this kind of operatic excess where the camera's kind of constantly roving in a circle around characters, and it's meant to give all of this like this grandiose, you know, this grandiosity, but it constantly just kind of reminded me how hollow everything felt, and by the time we just kept going, it just became clear that I wasn't finding the like dynamics of control interesting enough in the way that I did like The Lobster. And The Lobster, to be fair, like people act in ridiculous ways even beyond what you expect of the premise, but it's fair to say that there's a shift in The Lobster that has to do with perspective, that has to do with narrative, and that like that was one of those movies where I was losing interest and then it kind of brought me back with how weird it was. And this shift never came here. Like this premise, he goes full bore with it, but it just didn't work for me. And by the time we got like to the hour mark and the hour and a half mark, I just so badly wanted to get out of there. And that is partly just that I think these characters are too one note for me to continue. Colin Farrell's usually someone I love. Same with Nicole Kidman. And I just think both of their performances here are just a little bit sleepy. Ferrell definitely knows how to deliver some of the Lanthimos dialogue, and he does know how to find that weird bridge between like perversity and mundanity that like Lanthimos dialogue and his work always like tries to approach. But yeah, the whole thing just didn't work for me, and I couldn't get out of the theater quick enough.
Yeah, I didn't like this movie that much. And there are a number of reasons why. So
the last we're in the minority, Brian. Like, I know. Super in the minority.
I know. And I'm fine with that, because this is one of those moments where I just feel like, oh, I get it. A movie is slightly weird and has lots of symmetry and tracking shots, and you think it's a masterpiece. Congratulations. I can't wait to see your video essay that puts a dotted line down the center of the frame like it's some fucking revelation. Anyway.
Oh, it's definitely out there already.
Yeah, it's out there, and it's terrible, and it probably has classical music, and it probably talks about Kubrick and Fincher. So The Lobster. The Lobster is a weirder, stranger movie than this, but it inhabits a world that is weird and strange. And so when the characters don't speak correctly, when everyone seems a little one note, I thought of it as being a result of that world. This is a world where you have to narrow yourself down to one stupid thing that you think means that you're meant to be with someone. You know, pounding your face on a table until you have a nosebleed so you can be with a girl who has a nosebleed, being nearsighted. Like, you are a blank fucking slate, because the more personality you have, the more chances there are for someone to dislike you, and then you get turned into an animal. Right? And that's not great. So, like, I made those mental connections, and then I walked into The Killing of a Sacred Deer, and everyone's acting the exact goddamn same way. So, I'm not going to say it retroactively makes me dislike The Lobster, but it does make me question how much of what I thought it was doing was just me finding something that wasn't meant to be there. Which is depressing, because I really liked The Lobster. What I'll say is that this movie, with its premise, can go a number of different ways, and this movie, despite all of its visual complexity and sterility, and despite having a very strong cast, decides to go in the laziest, least interesting way possible. At the end, you could probably have a really good conversation, and I'm sure that we will, if you just want to talk about the plot of this movie in terms of what would you do, or what do you think the right answer was.
Yeah.
But the movie makes no effort to really explore any of the options available to the characters. It instead of making someone do moral, philosophical, any kind of ethical weighing, they simply try to fix the problem, and then when they can't, or they don't, or you know, whatever happens at the end, it's they just kind of like throw up their hands and like, well, chance, I guess. I don't know. Like, there's a fundamental lack of real complexity or thought. And I know that I've said this before on this podcast. I can't remember what movie it was. My wife and I spent some time thinking about what movie it was, and we couldn't remember. There was a movie that we saw that had a similar problem. And I said that you would be better served having the plot of the film, like the log line, written out on a note card to be read out loud at a dinner party as a topic of conversation, and that would lead to a conversation that is interesting enough to sustain possibly the movie's runtime, but would be infinitely more interesting. And this is that kind of movie, because unfortunately there's really not a lot here to grasp onto. You never really get a feeling of the characters as people. So the threat posed to any of them seems minimal, because who cares if a cipher dies? Who cares? Like, what difference does it make? Who cares if a cipher were to lose a limb? You know, you put a mannequin out, you tell me its name is Steve and that he likes to play piano, you can do whatever the fuck you want to that mannequin. I still don't care. And so that's what I found myself going through in this movie. I can, as a father graft my feelings onto a movie if I want to, but this movie didn't even seem to want me to. And its acting style is alienating to the point that it only makes the visceral horror of the situation that much more remote. And so, you know, it fails. It fails on every level. It fails as a story. Because the actors within the story do nothing. It fails as a, like, philosophical exercise because you can't really graft any real world consequences on anything. And it fails as just like a horror movie because no one's acting the way that you would want them to, and so you don't really care. So I spent an inordinate amount of time in this movie trying to think of how it could end or how I would react, hoping that one of the things that I came up with would be the route that it took. Mm-hmm. Knowing the end of The Lobster, I assumed that there would be some sort of gut punch. But sure. It really wasn't. It was like someone throwing lightly cooked pasta at my stomach, and like not a handful, just a single strand of pasta. The lobster had a gut punch. The lobster had an ambiguous, interesting ending, and this one goes for full on shock value.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, it just delivers like an ending, and it's over, and you're like, oh, okay, well, fine, whatever, and then you leave, and then my time has been split since then between wondering why this is how they chose to tell this story and thinking of all the ways that it could have been more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, like I said, it's a bummer because like it makes me think of The Lobster, and it makes me think of all the little idiosyncratic quirks that I assumed were part of the world building for this strange alternate future. And
now you're thinking that it's just the way that he writes dialogues and characters right now.
Yeah, but well, if that's true, I'll still take it. You know, like I'll still take The Lobster, but it's going to be like, instead of look at the intricately created mechanism, it's going to be like mm-hmm. lightning hit this tree and it kind of looks like Jay Leno now. Cool, right?
Right. Well, I think the thing is that I know you said you haven't seen Dogtooth, but without saying anything that can spoil you, in the same way that you can rationalize in The Lobster why these characters would simplify themselves, in Dogtooth, it's similarly the setting that they live in that allows them to act this way. And that's the weird thing about Sacred Deer is that
they have the same kind of character rhythms in Dogtooth. Is Dogtooth in English?
It is
no,
not.
It's in Greek.
Yeah. See, that ruins everything because you.
No, it doesn't.
Well, but I mean, you wouldn't be able to tell if you're solely an English speaker whether these characters are acting weird in the way that they're interacting with each other.
I feel like, right? I feel like the difference between Americans and Greeks can't be so great that you wouldn't be able to pick up on some weirdness.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, I guess the language that's spoken or, you know, translated onto the screen might just sure. be enough to where it's like, oh yeah, that's not something you say to another human.
Well, that's like what was the movie that I really enjoyed? Sleepless Night, where the French mm-hmm. cop has to, you know, apparently yes. the acting yeah, yeah. in that movie is terrible.
Yes, in French. Yeah, but we had a long conversation about that, yeah. which is hilarious because it's like, wait, no, I really like that movie. And people in France are like, that was a terrible actor. Yeah, and you're just like, I don't know.
Because apparently they were going for an American style movie.
Sure.
So it's like when we remake a film here and mm-hmm. we're just like, okay, but we want to keep some of the Frenchness to it, right? So
sure.
you should really move your hand when you talk. And make sure yeah. to really pull on that cigarette like your life depends on it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think the intonation is a fair point. I'm getting off track, but Dogtooth is more primal. Like, there's a lot less dialogue, but whatever. My point being, though, is I think, Brian, why I had such a fundamental problem buying in to this movie is everyone – this is just the standard. everyone acts like this. Like, it's not the only the family. And so, like, it's just not. But then the actual story has nothing to do with how these characters actually behave. Like, it's just it's just a way to enable it.
It's not heightening a notion in our own world. You know, it's not like if you're talking about, let's pick an easy target, millennials, and you just have them constantly talking about Snapchat, and they say LOL instead of laughing, and they say duck you instead of fuck you because text language has taken over real language. Like, that's weird, but it has a connection that you can see being turned into a satirical point. It's terrible. I hope that no one out there is writing a movie like that, or, let's be honest, a YA novel, but it's a thing that you could latch onto, and you'd be like, oh, I see what you're doing. It's not good, but I see what you're doing. And in this movie, on the other hand, I can see it with my eyes, but I'm not making any connection. You know,
that mechanism isn't functional.
What does it mean that this 16-year-old boy is acting this way? Like, and there seems to be no one thinks it's weird. I kept waiting for someone to be like, that Martin's a bit off, isn't he? But everyone's like,
good man.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. My watch band, leather.
Yeah, exactly.
We should try to do this podcast in Lathimo speak.
Oh, no.
God. The characters in this film that populate this film, the way that they talk, you would think that maybe he was making, if it was just Colin Farrell and maybe Nicole Kidman and maybe even their kids, you would think maybe that he's kind of trying to say something about the medical field and how they have to have distance. And so they interact with each other in a very kind of frank and upfront way because that's kind of how they approach the world.
Sure.
But clearly the wider the arc of this film, you start to realize like the mom talks like this and then Barry talks like this and then everybody else seems to talk like this.
Sure.
Although honestly, we have maybe like 7 or 8 players in this film that have like speaking roles of any kind of significance, and that's it. Everybody else is like maybe a yes or a no, and that's about it, right? Yeah. Everybody else is just like barely in this film. It really is perspective. But if it was focused on just the medical field, it might make sense why they kind of talk in this way, but it doesn't limit itself to that. So
I think that's the weird thing too, is there's that one scene that does bring in an institution at the hospital, and even that scene is like doesn't amount to anything. Like it's very strange, as you're saying. Both of you are saying that all of these possibilities are here. It's like they could have given themselves an easier way to tell the story, but it's not. Like, it's still trying to tell this story in as conventional way as possible. And I'm sure some people think that is interesting, to have the conventional meet, you know, this very eccentric point of view. But I don't think either of those, you know, mesh. And then I wonder about those inconsistencies all the more.
And here's, I mean, and like I said, you know, like I can see building up a world and this being this thing, but it was this type of thing where every time that they introduced a real world element that I am used to, it like was jarring. So like they pull out a phone and it's clearly an iPhone. And I'm like, oh my God, why do you have an iPhone? And then the girl is singing the Ellie Goulding song Burn. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, she is a normal child that has normal child like interests. How bizarre that she is speaking this way. I was prepared for her to be, I don't know, like reading Keats or something. Like it doesn't jibe. It doesn't fit. And then, you're just like asked to, again, it's the plot of this movie. Like, you're asked to try to take the value of a human life while watching grasshoppers dressed up in people suits go through the motions, and and it just makes it really difficult to connect with. And
who cares about gods and regular people if they're not anyone who's recognizable?
Yeah, for instance, like I read a review of this movie after having seen it, and it said like, oh, this is a movie about like a god being made to like make penance or like face the justice of a mortal. And it's like, but like, what is, there's no difference between them. When I first saw Colin Farrell and Barry Keoghan as Stephen and Martin, respectively, having a conversation, I was like, wow, this is a very awkward conversation. Their relationship must be utterly fraught. I assumed that they had like a romance or that he was a love child. And then I find out that that's just how he talks to everyone. And I just,
that's the most functional relationship in the movie.
Yeah. It's super strange. And so, and like I said, like, if that's what you want to do, cool. But like, then you just, you kind of are hanging, you're hanging a boring story on boring characters. And like, you could take a boring story, put in some interesting characters, and that'll give you something. You could take boring characters and put in an interesting story. And that's how The Walking Dead is still in season 8 or whatever it is. But like, you just do this, and all I can think is, it's as though a philosophy textbook with like all of the discussion chapters was brought to life by dark magic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
I mean,
I'm sorry. I want to finish up my thoughts by saying, like, you know, just don't bother. Like, it's not particularly good or interesting. And the ways that it can be interesting, again, listen to the first part of the spoiler section, and then just take that to your friends and be like, "What would you do?"
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think we talked about anything that. That anybody could actually take to their friends and be like, because we were incredibly vague.
Yeah, well, that's why I said listen to the first like minute or two of the spoiler section.
Oh. Yeah. I thought you meant the non-spoiler. Okay, I just heard that wrong. Okay, yeah. Okay. Anyways.
In fact, we should get into that soon, so if you have a final thing you'd like to say, Bill?
I have a couple of things that I want to kind of touch on while we are outside of the spoiler section.
All right.
Two of them have to do with the actors in this film. First, Barry Keoghan is 25 years old, and every time I have to realize that, it blows my mind more and more because he's playing a 16-year-old in this film, and you believe he is 16. I listened to an interview with him. He's either Scottish or Irish. I can't remember. And I apologize because I can't remember the difference. But, like, yeah, he's very much that. And he was talking about how it would be nice maybe in, like, 5 years to play a little bit closer to his age. But for now, he's going to go ahead and, like, accept all these roles where he plays, like, you know, 15, 16, 17, whatever. The other thing that I wanted to mention, Alicia Silverstone is in this movie. And I rarely look up the cast and crew nowadays before going into seeing a movie like this. You know, like, I know everybody that's in Thor Ragnarok. I know everybody that's in the new Star Wars film, but this film, I don't care to know who is in this because I like to kind of fly in blind. And so when I saw Alicia Silverstone, I thought I recognized her and I said, there's no way that's her. And then I looked at her more and I was like, I think that's her. And I had to get on IMDb to confirm that, but yes, it's definitely Alicia Silverstone plays Barry's mom in this film, and it just kind of blew my mind that, A, where has she been? I guess she's been making some TV stuff or whatever, but I have not run across her in a while, and I don't know how she ended up in this film. Like, this seems like such an odd, like, hey, here's my big screen, like, revival, like, check me out in Killing of the Sacred Deer. Like, what a weird film to just be like, oh yeah, like I'm famous for making this film called Clueless. this seems like right up my alley, right? It's
she
like,
does
no.
get the best line in the movie.
Yeah. I don't know what that is, but.
What, are you kidding me, Bill?
I don't remember.
That's right.
Don't
it's
remember
been
dialogue
3 days. Bill has forgotten all the dialogue in this movie.
Pretty much. Except for about the watches and the bands. The other thing that I want to mention is I hear you that this film does not do a good job of selling these characters as characters to actually root for or care for or just simply like be curious about. And I understand that. Just simply, I like Colin Farrell's character in this film.
Okay.
Interacts with him in that way where it's his son. Well, I automatically just kind of care about him, and I automatically kind of care about his relationship with his wife, and I automatically just kind of care for his kids. And that's not to negate like what you're saying about like, well, you have to give me stakes beyond just like, oh, it's his son, and I didn't give you any reason to care about his son. I don't get bogged down in stuff like that, I guess. I don't know. But like
Bill
my
has
concern
no time for human emotion.
My concern was never like, oh, I care about this kid. My concern was how are they gonna get out of this situation? And so I guess for me, I guess my mental state just always gets bogged down in the kind of Rubik's Cube of the situation. And I don't really care about like how much you sell the – because the way that these characters talk is already putting me at arm's length regardless. So I never really couldn't – like I'm never going to cry at one of these movies. Like – just no, it's not going to happen because the way they interact, the dialogue and everything else, it's just feels like very medicinal in a way. And so I look at it from a puzzle box. And Brian, you're right to criticize it in that way of just like, well, they could have done more with that. And I don't necessarily disagree with that, but I do just want to mention that, like, I didn't care. So like, I don't know. I enjoyed the puzzle box nature of it because I honestly did not expect them to go that far down the rabbit hole that they did. I expected there to be some kind of explanation, and I expected there to be some kind of like revelatory thing. And I don't know if that's a spoiler or not, but like, whatever. It doesn't happen. And you're just like, wait, like, okay. That's this movie? It's just like straight up, yeah, superpowers, man. You're just like, okay, all right, I guess. I don't know. Is that too spoilery?
I don't think so. And we're close enough to the spoilers that...
Yes, we're just going to get into it.
I think you're fine. All
right. So spoilers for The Killing of a Sacred Deer. We are now going to spoil this movie. Please turn off your podcast app or flip to a different show. Here we go.
Are any of y'all wearing watches?
No.
Nope.
I don't have a watch,
but I'm not wearing it currently.
Okay. I don't know what my
water resistance.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Mine's only like 15 meters. It's like just about good enough to get caught in a rainstorm.
Mine says water resist 20 bar, as if I know what the fuck that means.
What the hell is 20 bar? What is the measurement of a bar?
I guess that's some kind of pressure.
Maybe.
So should I just try this with my iPhone? How do you think this will go?
Yeah, let's just throw it. You should ask Siri what she's water resistant to.
There's got to be an answer to that one. I'm going to have to check that out.
There is a Thrillist article called What Your Watch Water Resistant Numbers Really Mean.
I love Thrillist so much.
Yeah. So that's curious. Water resistant. I don't know. I'm not going to read through this. Well, not right now. Not on the episode. So anyway, Colin Farrell accidentally. I'm going to start using character names. Steve.
We go slow enough that they can write it down for the dinner party, Brian.
Yes. So Steven who is played by Colin Farrell. Unimportant for your dinner party, but if you need a visual aid. Steven was the surgeon who was treating the father of Martin, played by Barry Keoghan. His father died. Martin is not okay about it. So Martin, through means which are never fully explained, begins to make Colin Farrell's family sick. The sickness has four stages: numbness and lack of use of the limbs, really just the legs. Then there is the refusal of food to the point of starvation. Then there is the bleeding from the eyes, and then the final stage is death. So Martin tells Steven, your family's going to get sick one by one, and they're going to start dying until you kill a member of your family. It's justice for you killing my father. So the question becomes, assuming that there is no way to stop this, who do you kill? And not only that, but will this trial instill in Stephen Murphy any sense of responsibility or hubris or shame or literally anything at all? Will he be changed by this experience?
Well, characteristic.
The answers to these questions are as follows. It is true that he cannot stop the force, so he must kill a member of his family. He kills his son. He does this through the preposterous method of putting his family with pillowcases over their heads, their mouths bound and their hands bound, in a circle around him in the living room. He then takes a hunting rifle, spins in a circle, and just fires randomly until he happens to hit one of them. He misses twice and then gets a perfect kill shot on the third, and it kills his son. His son, yes, who had been sick the longest and whose eyes were already bleeding. The rest of his family is fine. Steven appears not to have changed at all.
Although we don't, to be fair, we do not spend enough time after the situation to get any sense of what's happened to these characters.
Yeah. So I want to start this spoiler section by asking you, let's assume that you have Steven's life. You have a wife and two children, one a mop-headed young man, the other a long-haired young woman. She sings. He won't water the plants. Your wife is an ophthalmologist. Those are the things that we know about them. You are unable to find any crocodile teeth, pigeon blood, and virgin pubes. Who do you kill? Bill Graham.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the kid. It's pretty simple that it was leaning that direction.
So and you, the you fact in that situation, if you were Steven, you would have killed the son?
Yeah.
Can you tell me why you would have killed him?
Well, one, he's the youngest. Two, he does seem to have the least amount of prospects. Three, as Nicole Kidman mentions, we can always have another child. Four, he is kind of annoying. Five, he's already bleeding out of the eyes. And yeah, that's almost enough. But also, the fact that this girl has a relationship with the character that's poisoning everybody gives me real pause for concern. So I'm just maybe you got us in this situation.
Okay. Michael Snydell, who would you kill?
Yeah, I think
two kids and your wife.
So, yeah, just dissecting this a little bit, I think I would have also picked the youngest kid only because he was the closest to death.
But that, why does that matter?
No, because it would be a consideration for me. It's something if I was looking for any possible reason to kill someone in my family, the reason why, I think the kids are going to be fucked up no matter what. I can't imagine a family's going to be super functional after watching a father kill a sibling or your mother. Mm-hmm. So killing Nicole Kidman, I think, makes less sense because, I just don't think that Colin Farrell is has the ability to be responsible for children. I see nothing in this movie that makes me think that he could be able to handle it on his own. And I was really kind of hoping that he was just going to end up killing himself and that was going to be fine, but that didn't happen.
I was on that level. I was expecting him to kill himself. And then for the next scene to be like a picture of their family crypt where everyone else in his family died 3 days after he killed himself.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
that
then
to me would have been interesting.
I did have the other thing Bill was talking about. One of the many things that was super annoying was, again, I don't need any explanation for supernatural bullshit, but having her be, I don't know, mesmerized or hypnotized or whatever you want to say.
Yeah, stop flirting with the snake.
Yes. Yes.
So here's
maybe I should kill the girl. You know what?
I vacillated. I like thought through every single possibility. You know, the girl, she's fine, but she's flirting with the enemy. So like, you know, my Italian and Irish sense of like family above all else kind of makes me want to kill her. The boy.
She's also kind of at the point of no return, to be fair.
Yeah. And the boy, you know, what's his name? Bob. First of all, who names a child Bob?
Yeah.
Bob is what you start getting called when you're 50. Anyway, so Bob, you know, I thought about it and I was like, well, he doesn't have a lot going for him, but that just means he has more potential because he can choose to be anything. But that girl seems pretty dead set on this chorus thing. And then, of course, there's like, well, I could kill your mom. She's closest to death anyway, numerically. So I'm curious. I am the only person in this group who has a child. I brought that to this. I'm married, so I have a wife, too. So who do you think that I decided to kill? Bill Graham.
Jesus.
Yeah.
This episode got more fun.
The son. Still the son.
All right. Well, Michael Snydell.
I feel like it's maybe, okay, I think it's the daughter, but I think it could also be the wife, except for how negative you are towards Colin Farrell as a human being.
But I'll add this as one final wrinkle. I think you would have just killed yourself.
No, because that wouldn't save them. I feel like
that's the mortal mistake that some people would have made, right?
Right. You gotta find the Brian choice. You gotta find Martin and get some clarification. You gotta be like, look, if I killed myself,
would that be enough?
Would that be enough? And then he'd probably be like, no, because then you don't suffer. And then I'd been like, shit, all right, fine, Martin. So this is what I decided. I'm gonna kill both of my kids. And I'm going to walk you through the flawless reasoning I have for this. And it will bring us back into the plot of the movie. So both of the kids...
I'm going to report you to child services.
Yes. You got to tell child services, should black magic ever make this man force who to kill in his family, rather than kill one person, he will kill both of his children. So here was my thought process. Because at a certain point in this movie, they all go home. Because the hospital's just like, I don't know. So they go home and the kids start like needling each other, being like, I'm going to live. No, I'm going to live. They've already bought me a piano. And it's like, well, I'm going to run away with the guy who's destroying us. And they start kind of like trying to get on your good side to like not die. So Colin Farrell has to deal with his son being like, Dad, I've decided I want to be an ophthalmologist. I want to be a cardiologist like you. And his daughter's like, I'm going to go water the plants, even though my legs don't work. And so my thought process was, you kill one kid, they're probably going to feel guilty at some point because their sibling died so that they could live. And like, I can't imagine them growing up that well, if that's the case, or they get like a real ego on them and then you've got to deal with that. Now, the other problem is that if you have any more children, how are you going to like explain that to them? So
sure.
In my head, I thought, well, the only logical thing to do is to kill both children. So that way, the number of people who have to live with this is reduced to you and your wife, who can work their way through it
You're going to work your way through that.
Understand
really.
It as adults, and then if you decide to have a new family with a child who is unmarred by the tragedy of having Jesus. To know that their sibling died for them.
Who's to say that this hasn't already happened and this is why they interact with each other this way?
You think that they used to have... This is like every 5 years, Colin Farrell kills someone. We used to have five children. He's getting real good at that gun spinning game. The first time it took him 3 hours.
Oh, shit. You know what I just realized? That Nicole Kidman and Colin Farrell are in another movie this year, The Beguiled.
Yeah.
I was like, why do I think that I've seen them interact recently?
Because you have.
Okay.
But yeah, here's the thing.
It's a 90% chance that that adults will divorce after losing one child. Yeah. What do you think happens to that percentage after losing two children?
That you
I
kill.
I feel like it's easier. Because
look, she straight up was like,
she was fine. Hey, with it.
Yeah, like she seemed oddly okay with that. I don't know if she was necessarily like literally pleading her case, because she also mentions that she's gonna wear the black dress, and yeah. Colin Farrell's like, I don't
wear
care.
Whatever you like. Oh, since we're like, spoilers, Bill, the best line of the movie was, "I like must insist that you not leave until you taste my tart."
Yes. I remember this. Yes. That was good.
Yep. So what I was going to say is now you listen to everything that we said about who we would kill and why. You have apparently a strong bias towards killing the character who died anyway, which is shocking to me. I feel like you let the youngest one live. You know,
no,
because he's got prospects. He's got the least amount of corruption to him. Like, that girl has started smoking. That's a lifelong habit, you know, but that kid is like still figuring it out. So you're like, all right, whatever. Knock that one down and let this guy continue to thrive. But what I was going to say is we've been through in like the 15 minutes we've been talking about this. So many more interesting thoroughfares and concepts and ideas than this movie bothers to go through.
Sure. The fact that he decides to go eeny, meeny, miny, moe, and even like the way that he does it is just like real dumb. I would have much preferred him to like, let's say, eeny, meeny, miny, moe, and I kick at a chair that each of them are like on.
And it falls back onto a kitchen knife.
No, they are strangled to death. And so they're all like balanced on a chair. And so you go eeny, meeny, miny, moe, and then you kick forward. And then, okay, I missed. Okay, eeny, meeny, miny, moe, kick forward. Okay, I missed. Like, that seems like a much more certain way of like of a clean death, of a possible death that like you could be like, oh, yeah, like my son killed himself or my daughter killed himself or my wife killed herself.
Bill is going into covering up the crime too.
This is
darkness to Bill Graham.
I'm thinking ahead, man. Because
well, that's like the movie doesn't even wrestle with that.
No, it doesn't.
He's got three bullet holes in his house and a dead child.
But I mean, again, to be fair, this movie spends like 20 seconds after that situation happens, exploring like how these characters like are going on now. And apparently they just like meet up with him and they're like, yo, I'm walking and I'm eating food and I'm going to walk out of this diner. So peace. And you're just like,
so is that them saying what the hell is this to him?
I don't even know.
That's what
like,
I got.
Why is this kid around? Like, what is this fucking movie? This movie's bananas.
Like,
okay?
All you did was kill Bob. And like the rest of us are seemingly unaffected because we're crickets
and we don't like you anymore.
Like, come on. I gave you like a $9,000 watch and you're going to do this to me. You dick.
I wonder if
he got his watch back when he kidnapped him. I don't know. But because one of my problems was like this movie spent so much time like being an episode of House but like minus any of the interesting parts of House. So more like,
you're really
dotty aunt who can't keep any details in her mind telling you about an episode of House she saw for like an hour in the middle of this movie.
I do want to like defend the hurdles that Colin Farrell like goes through to try and figure out what's going on with this child. And like, I mean, honestly, the one like real honest interaction in this film is as soon as Barry Keoghan's character tells Colin Farrell's character about like what he's basically done. The very next scene is Barry being escorted out by the police and basically be like, yeah. No, you get the fuck out of here. Like, this is not okay. So like, and he even brings like outside sources and stuff like that, yeah. Like to try and research. And all of them are just like shrug emoji, like no clue. Like your kid can walk. Like there's nothing wrong with your child. They are choosing to do this. And so for the first like 20 minutes of this, of that kind of, I don't know, yeah, 20-ish minutes of it, you're like, oh, maybe the kids are kind of in on it. And especially like once they start to interact, you're like, oh, this is where they're going to like talk about like what they're getting out of it or something like that, like trying to get back at their parents or something like that. Right. That's the way my mind kind of works. So I gave it a pass in how kind of devastated they are. The parents are and like everything like that. But I mean, even like Nicole Kidman has like an emotional breakdown and like gives a guy a hand job to like get enough information to figure out what the hell is going on. Like,
but even that revelation like isn't anything. Like I don't know
if this movie just needs more like actual regulation on like what this power is or
I really don't think it does.
I don't think so either.
That was the least issue I took with it. Like, I'm same. Willing to buy that premise. Fine. Yeah. This kid hates so much that he's bending reality. Great.
Sure.
Now do something interesting with it, goddammit. Like
Colin Farrell
have to like become a private detective who discovers a bunch of horrible shit about his children.
Like, oh, that sounds awesome. I want that movie.
like suddenly he finds out that like his son has been killing neighborhood cats and like his daughter is like not addicted to heroin, but selling it to the elementary school.
Yeah, I was
school.
Just about to well, say,
like,
yeah.
Like, well, that principal scene, like that is the movie I want.
Like even that is such like a fucking cop out because he's like, oh, I don't know, like he's good in science and math, but she's good in literature and philosophy, and she did a thing, and you know, and then Colin Farrell like is like, well, who would you fucking murder? And the guy's like, oh, I don't know, they both seem pretty swell to me. I don't know why I've made him Eeyore, but he is, so deal with it. And so like, but you do, I want more of that. I want like a movie where Colin Farrell is going to interview his children's friends, teachers, and like the people that they like buy like milkshakes from, just like making a fucking insane pros and con list where it's like, for some reason on the cons is the fact that his son only drinks vanilla milkshakes.
Sure.
It's like, well, why is that on the list? I don't know. Cause it means he's not adventurous and he's not going to live a good life cause he never tries anything new. And so I'm going to kill him.
Instead of this bullshit shock violence, right? Just like interspersed between nothing.
Like, yeah. And you've got the whole weird, like funny gamesy subplot with like the fucking kid, Martin tied up in the basement that like only serves to give like the daughter a reason to hate him, which like, I don't really care about that anyway. And then I just like, it's just, there's so much that this movie could have done. And given what The Lobster did, again, like the world building in that and the explication of like that scene where they go to the mall and they have to like be a couple, you know, even though they're currently a part of a group that like bands coupled them, but they're actually a sincere couple, which if they would just go back to the hotel would be fine. But then they ran away from the hotel. So now the hotel just wants to turn them into animals. Like, I mean, there was so much there. And in this movie, it's like, you have a choice to make. You know, one of your children must, well, we keep saying children, but he definitely could have killed his wife too. One of your family members must die, or else they're all gonna die. And then he's like, I'm gonna fight this through science. And then they're like, science won't help you. And he's like, well, I'm gonna do nothing for a couple of days. And then I'm gonna do a, one of those wiffle ball head spins and hope that I shoot my son in the chest. Like,
Phil, I'm still kind of curious why this worked for you and the lobster didn't, though. Like, the can you be a little more specific?
Oh, sure. The lobster fell apart for me just simply because of the character interactions. I really did not like the childlike kind of like nature of how they interact and how they just kind of are like coupling. And I found that that proceeded throughout the world where everybody that they interacted with had that same kind of mentality. And so that's how that film kind of fell apart for me. But the world building and everything else surrounding that, I think, you know, a lot of people give it credit for, and I did too. So I had just like an issue with the way the characters interact. And for some reason, I don't have that issue with this film as much.
That's insane.
Yeah, that's so weird.
I know. I can't explain myself. I don't know, guys. I just, at the surface, I accepted this film and I was like, oh, okay, cool. And I just enjoyed the premise so much because, like, the premise is literally given to us kind of in the trailers in a sneaky way and is honestly not explored much more than, like, what's actually in the trailers. And so for some reason that, like, it sold me on here's the premise, and then it gave me exactly that. And so I was, like, satisfied. I don't know.
I mean, I guess there are a few scenes that I mean the one thing that I do like about how inept Colin Farrell is those scenes where he just tries to force his kids to walk, like just the level of like delusion that's there. Like, that's another movie that's not made. Like, it's so strange,
because again, that could be a compelling, interesting, weird thing where he's like, why can't I will this to be okay? But it's not.
Which that's what it kind of seems like it at least wants to be about, when you consider like the larger themes of him being a god. Like, it's so weird, all the things that this lends itself to that it doesn't explore at all. I don't know. I'm now just saying the same things over and over. This movie just made me mad.
Well, that's the funny thing is that, like, you can't, like, there's not even enough to talk about in this movie. This movie will give you a lot of stuff to talk about, but as like we could go for hours, like, about like, okay, let's like figure out why we'd kill Anna, his wife. Like, let's talk about why we'd kill Bob. Let's talk about why we'd kill Kim. But like, that's not what's in the movie. What's in the movie is spin in a circle, fucking kill shot on Bob, and then let's go to the diner and fucking eat our food, and then like do a weird slow motion like Reservoir Dogs walk out on fucking Martin.
Yeah. I don't know. I did not enjoy the end of this film, I will say that. I honestly thought
that Colin Farrell was going to like turn around on Martin. Like, I thought he was going to be like, okay, well, my family's going to die. Well, guess what? Here's a picture of your mom. I'm going to start sending you fingers. Like,
yeah, like,
I went to your school. I watched you for 3 days. I saw the people you talk to the most. I know where they live. Your friend that you play basketball with.
Yeah.
Basketball. Here's his toe.
Here's his toe and his thumb.
Right. Like, don't.
How do you feel about that?
This isn't Brawl in Cell Block 99. Beating the shit out of the guy who's torturing you isn't going to work this time because he's nuts. Yeah. He seems to he bit his own arm off. He bit a piece of his own arm off. Like,
that was gnarly.
Yeah, it was pretty gnarly. And he's like, it's a metaphor, and I'm like, I feel like we've stepped beyond metaphor. It's you maniac. And then it's just weird because like Nicole Kidman like kisses his feet and it's like, so is he like, is he like, so he's now being treated like a god? Is that like what we're saying? Like all gods are unfeeling, uncaring creatures. But like, if that's the case, then you need a human there to balance it out. And Nicole Kidman is not enough of a human. She's a weird Lady Macbethian figure.
Yeah,
who literally says it's better if we kill a child because we can have another child.
His entire character, though, is like all about not taking responsibility, like to the point where like he blames every kill a patient only an anesthesiologist can, and like his whole episode of like drinking apparently and having an effect on like his surgeries and his performance there. And so like I just think like this character is a just really inept at like making a decision. Like I can see him going to like the Audi dealership and Nicole Kidman like doing all the negotiation and like being like, no, you want this one, like this is the one you want, and him just being like, I guess. Sure. Like, so yeah, and Nicole Kidman definitely bought him that watch. Like, he has strong opinions about it now that he has it, but he didn't choose it. So I feel like that's kind of his character in a nutshell. It's just like not making decision and struggling and struggling and struggling to make a decision. And here he is given the biggest decision of his entire fucking life. And what does he do? He, like you just gloriously put it, he wiffle bossed that shit. Like,
yeah.
Okay, I'm just going to spin around in a circle and here we go. And just like, I guess that's a way to make it. Not something that I would suggest or that I would figure a heart surgeon would be doing, but okay.
Sure. But I think Nicole Kidman needs to pick up the slack in that case. Like, if that is how they want to characterize Steve, that's understandable and less interesting to me for sure. But then Nicole Kidman needs to be the one. They need to at least be able to play with that relationship beyond her playing dead and him masturbating. Like, it's I don't know. Like, this is even more so than The Lobster, which I think was prone to like quirkiness in annoying ways. Like, this, I feel like there are scenes that are in here that are just like, this would get a rise out of people, or you know, it's
yeah. And, like, and it was Colin kind of Farrell annoying talking about jerking off his dad.
Sure. And it was kind of annoying to have, like, it was kind of annoying to see people in my audience, like, being like, like reacting in a way. Like, it made me more mad in a way, because I'm like, you don't deserve this reaction. Like, a quick side note. What was the reaction of your theaters? Because I would say my theater did not like this movie.
Very quiet.
I had between two and four couples. I don't know what the four people sitting in front of me were. Because there was two guys and two girls, but they were aligned guy, guy, girl, girl. So I assume that maybe one of them was a couple or was a group date. I don't know. But so like there were eight other people and I just like there were some laughs every now and then. Like I busted out laughing when Alicia Silverstone said, you know, I just insist that you taste my tart. Because I was like, how many times have we been in that situation? But like, yeah, there wasn't a lot. And then it was funny because, so like, I'm usually one of those guys who stays to the end of a movie, like after the credits are done.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to go see this at 10:30 at night. And so it was like 12:45 and I was like, I gotta get the fuck out of here. But then no one else stood up and I was like, ooh, I don't want to be that guy. So I figured that they would do the polite thing, which is wait until the crawl, you know? You get the title cards at the end, and then you get like the really important people, and then you get to the crawl and you're gone. And they did not. So at a certain point I was like, fuck you guys. And then I just left. So like, I don't know what their thinking was. I didn't, you know, I assumed that no one walked out. But like, I was so disengaged from the movie that anytime that like they did or said anything, my audience, first of all, thank you to this audience. This is the first time I've been to the theaters in God knows how long where I haven't felt the need to fight someone. But like,
I had to.
No good.
I mean, it's karma.
So, So yeah, I was so disengaged from the movie that I didn't even really notice what my audience was doing because my focus was so interior. Because I was like, I wonder how they're going to end this movie. I wonder when this movie's going to end. I wish I was wearing a watch because I can covertly check a watch and not my cell phone. You know, oh my God, wait, no, I just remembered something hilarious that the quadruple group did in front of me. So they entered the movie about 5 minutes late. And then sometime around the point that the boy was in the bedroom or like when the girl was singing, one of the guys pulls out his cell phone and it's a huge cell phone. It's one of the big ones that they're making now. And he starts typing on it. And I'm like, you know, I want to see where this is going. And he goes to the Killing of a Sacred Deer Wikipedia page.
Oh my God.
Scrolls to the plot, reads a bit, and then hands it to the dude next to him because at this point, both of the girls had gone to the bathroom.
So they they arrived 5 minutes late, and then the girls got up to go to the restroom.
This was like a half an hour maybe into the movie. I don't know. Time expanded. Okay. But so like
while
they're
trying
late,
to figure out.
They're sitting, they're trying to figure, I guess they're watching it, and the girls are like, I have to go to the bathroom. Well, okay, I'll come with you. And then the guys are like, okay, the girls are gone. We don't have to impress them. What the fuck are we watching? And so the guy hands him his phone. And I see it's like, you know, the Killing of a Sacred Deer plot. And just watch this guy read it. And then he hands it back to him. And this is like 5 minutes before they finally get threatened by Martin. And I'm just like, that's hilarious that they were just like, what is happening in this movie? It was honestly like the best thing that could have happened in that situation. Because we all know that I've been in some bad situations, but this time I was like, you know what? I'm okay with it, guys. You've earned this.
You do you.
All right. Well, that is. Do we have any final like last? We've talked a lot.
Oh, 20 bar is 200 meters, and Keoghan is Irish.
Oh, okay. And he was good. I loved him in Dunkirk as George.
George.
We're going to Georgie. War, George.
I want to say my favorite part with him is actually where he tells Colin Farrell what's going to happen to the kids. And he does like this. He does this entirely different delivery and runs the sentences all together. Like he's like trying to recite a paragraph that he only like, you know, he is trying so hard to remember, but that whole scene where he just recites everything that's going to happen to the kids is like just this wonderful bit of performance that has like so much more life than anything else.
You know, it's weird, Bill. So I was scrolling through that Thrill List article and I don't understand water resistance because it's like 100 meters is also 10 atmospheres and 10 bar.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you get up to 200 meters, it's 200 atmospheres and 20 bar.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And then 300 meters, 300 atmospheres, 30 bar. So like it appears that the bar is always 10 meters, but the atmospheres make a jump at some point.
Yeah. There's some kind of like percentage.
Yeah. Yeah.
A multiple of anyways. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's that. Good times. Great. This has been The Killing of a Sacred Deer, a title that is related to the myth that the girl wrote an essay about.
Do you want me to bring it up so I can remember what it's called?
Yeah,
it's the myth of
it's like
the Iphicenes.
Hold on. It's Agamemnon killed a deer.
Yeah.
The goddess of the hunt was like, fuck you. That was my deer. You have to kill one of your family now.
Oh.
Okay,
that's what that's based on.
Yeah, it's Iphigenia.
Oh, Iphigenia. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, great, guys!
How could I have forgotten about Iphigenia?
This is our new segment. This is explain the title to Bill.
I was surprised, Bill, that you didn't have more questions.
There's no deer in this.
This is one of the only movies this year that hasn't in some way killed a deer. Are you aware? Like,
yeah.
Think back on this year. This is the year that Deer got fucking murdered in movies.
Oh, yeah. I remember.
It's Get Out.
What was that?
So you think it up besides Get Out?
I had a list, honestly, earlier this year. I know that this doesn't quite count, but in the new season of The Leftovers, they ran over a kangaroo.
What? I need to watch The Leftovers then.
In the first season of The Leftovers, Kevin Garvey did hit a deer, but that was like 3 years ago. You know what? This is a moment for IMDb plot keywords because.
Or some kind of Thrill List article.
Plot keywords.
Or a Stagies Award.
I did see 7 deer on the side of the road dead on my way to San Antonio this weekend.
Yeah, so I have to drive across 495, which is the like 8-lane highway that goes around Washington, D.C. I see so many goddamn dead deers. Dead deer to me is not like a shocking symbolism for like things are about to go bad. It's just a commute and how fucking dumb deer are. Hitting a deer with a car is indeed a plot keyword on IMDb, as is killing a deer. And
how about a sacred deer?
Mounted deer head and just deer in general. Hitting a deer with a car. Get Out. The Judge. Oh, that's the only 2 titles? That can't be right.
Oh.
Let's see. Let's see. Killing a deer. What's the... Oh, Prisoners killed a deer. But that... Okay. Get Out. The Lost City of Z. Captain Fantastic. Morgan, apparently.
Yeah.
A Most Violent Year. The Indian in the Cupboard.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember that. Anyway, so if you remember a movie or television show from this year that involved someone murdering a deer, either on purpose or accidentally, send it to @filmstageshow on Twitter, hashtag dearly departed, and I'm so happy I made you make that noise. Anyway, that's it for today. It's been a pleasure. Go to patreon.com/thefilmstageshow and give us your money. And go to mubi.com/filmstage for your free 30-day trial of Mubi. You sign up now, you may still get a chance to catch some of the cool stuff they put out for Halloween, not to mention their Takashi Miike retrospective. And as Michael said earlier, they are doing a Pal Impress Burger retrospect, which should be pretty damn awesome. If you haven't seen Peeping Tom, check it out and then do some reading about the history of that film and what it did to their careers. It's pretty great. And it's a very interesting movie to see. It's got a bite to it. It's an interesting film. And you'll be able to see it for free if you go to mubi.com/filmstage and get your free 30-day trial of Mubi on us. That's Mubi. I don't know. We still don't have a tagline for it. Anyway, guys.
No. Better than sunscreen?
It is better than sunscreen. Because as we know from my trip to the beach, sunscreen does not fucking work. Just doesn't work. But if you watch Mubi and stay inside, then you'll never get sunburned. Maybe my limited exposure to the sun is why sunscreen doesn't work. Maybe I need to slowly like work my way up to it starting in January. Anyway, it doesn't
matter. We are so off the rails.
I blame the time shift. It is 9:05, but it's technically like 10 o'clock because we're doing the Sunday right after daylight savings, which was always hard, but is harder now that I have a child because my daughter is a lot like my dogs in that she doesn't know what time it is. She only knows when she's hungry or ready to stop sleeping.
Oh, that's like me.
Yeah. So like, it was like 5:30 and she was fading and I was just like poking her like, no, you're staying awake till 7 because no one's getting up with you tomorrow if you get up before when you're supposed to. So that's being a dad. That's being a dad with Brian, my new podcast. So what are we talking about next week?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a ladybird, maybe? Brian, I'm not doing this right now.
Saw a trailer for that.
This next week. Jeez. We're not doing this.
All right, fine, whatever.
We're not doing this.
So yeah, Lady Bird possibility. Love me some Saoirse Ronan.
Saoirse. Like Inertia.
Did I say that?
Yeah. And Greta Gerwig.
Like Inertia.
You're such a fan.
Yeah, I fucking love Greta Gerwig. That's definitely not why we shared a moment, Steven and I, during the Meyerowitz Stories podcast, talking about how we think that Greta Gerwig is a bad influence on Noah Baumbach.
I don't think he said that. I think you're twisting his words a little bit there.
I honestly can't remember. Anyway, let's wrap it up. We'll figure out what we're going to talk about. We'll tweet it out at Film Stage Show on Twitter, The Film Stage Show on Facebook, podcast at filmstage.com. On email, give us a comment or rating on iTunes. Guys, let's tell the fine people at home where we can be found between now and the next time. Let's start off with Bill Graham.
Woo. You can find me trying to catch Thor and not within 100 yards of a theater. On Twitter at CableBFG. You can also find me on the Slack channel trying to let people know that just because people come into your video store and request Medea 2 does not mean humanity is going to end. It will be okay.
I think it's going to end only because people don't realize that there is a window between theatrical and video release.
I don't think people care. I think that's the issue.
Possible. We're also, Bill, you are aware that on our Slack channel, there is a running like group of people who are just waiting for you to have your eventual mental breakdown.
Yes, I understand that. It's not going to happen, guys. but you know, good luck. Godspeed.
All right. Michael.
Okay.
Michael Snydell.
You can find me on Twitter at Snydell, where I'll be reporting Brian to DCFS for his comments and remarks on this episode. And you can find me on Letterboxd, where I've been watching a lot of weird-ass movies lately, including Despa, which I highly recommend.
All right. And you can find me on the Twitters at Brian J. Rowan. You can find me on my Letterboxd the same. Don't look for me on Facebook. I'm really not active there and I won't accept your friend request. But you can talk to me on Slack if you join our Patreon, patreon.com/filmstageshow. And of course, you can find me at my personal site, dearfilm.net. And you can find all of us all the time at filmstage.com. And that is that. So ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for enduring this, and we look forward to having you listen to us next time. Yeah, we got the fire, and we're gonna let it burn. If I have to have this damn song stuck in my head, then everyone who listens to this podcast does.
You doubled it, you bastard.
I